Blog Talk Radio.
It's time to head inside the film room and break down the tape. The FantasyGuru.com weekly matchup podcast is on. Here's John Hansen and Greg Cosell.
Good morning, everyone. This is not John Hansen, rather. This is Joe Dolan, the managing editor of FantasyGuru.com, and welcome to the Week 4 Matchup Podcast. We're going to break down all the action around the NFL, as John and Greg typically do. Greg watches more film than just about anybody on the planet, but before we do that, I just want to remind everyone, go to FantasyGuru.com, check it out if you haven't already. A lot of focus on the DFS side of things this year, and we have a brand new DFS guru, which for another week, we've extended the free trial. It's we've had a lot of success stories with it. It's an Excel tool. Basically, it optimizes lineups for you. And we've had a lot of people who are winning $50, $75, $100 with the tool. And I think that's really where people are going to have success with DFS. That's where you're going to have your fun if you're just starting out. You've obviously seen the commercials with people winning millions of dollars, hundreds of thousands of dollars. But if you start off by winning $50, $75, $100, $200, $300, and we've had a lot of people tweeted us that the DFS guru has helped them, I think you'll have a lot of fun playing DFS. And you don't have to deal with all these annoying injuries and these teams playing poorly. And but right now, we're going to welcome in the guy that you're all here to listen to. He is the senior producer of the Matchup Show on ESPN. He is NFL Films' Greg Cosell. Greg, how you doing this morning?
Joe, what's happening?
Greg, it's been an interesting start to the NFL season so far, and this is a discussion that we've had at the office a lot, and I'm going to use this to parlay into the Thursday night game, which is between Pittsburgh and Baltimore. Greg, it just doesn't seem like a lot of teams in the NFL, maybe you can count them on a hand or two, are playing all that well this year. And it's been a problem. And I think the Ravens are a team that you can highlight as a team that just seems to be out of sync. Their offensive line was expected to be a strength.
Yeah, there's two areas, I think, when you look around the league, if you want to look a little more macro and overview, Joe, that I think are struggling for a lot of teams, and that's offensive line and defense. And I think particularly when it comes to O-line, there's a cohesion that's required that takes time. One could make the argument that now September has become August in many ways. And even defensively, when you're dealing with different coverages and different coverage concepts, where there needs to be a lot of communication and a lot of understanding and seeing the same thing between different players, that takes time as well.
And to use this with the Baltimore Ravens in the Baltimore-Pittsburgh Thursday night game, which obviously kicks off tonight, a lot of fantasy players are sick and tired of Justin Forsett. They're sick and tired of the Ravens' run game. Is this all Justin Forsett's fault, the fact that he hasn't been able to get going?
No, and I think there's been a number of factors. One is clearly O-line play. Secondly has been their defense, because that has – they're a couple of these games they've gotten behind. And I think when you get behind, it changes the dynamic of a game, particularly your run game. And so I think there's a number of factors. I'm sure they would like that to get going. They might see tonight as an opportunity, Joe, simply because maybe they feel with Michael Vick playing quarterback that the Steelers offense will not be quite as explosive and dynamic as it has been under Ben Roethlisberger.
Yeah, and I've gotten a lot of tweets and a lot of questions about, like, what the heck's going on? Flacco's throwing 45 passes a game, and I just tell people, it's very clear that John Harbaugh doesn't want to do that. They've just had to do it so far. And I'm very curious to see if that changes tonight. And Greg, flipping over to the Pittsburgh side of the ball, Michael Vick's now going up against the Baltimore defense, and Le'Veon Bell came out this week and he said, "I truly expect to be the focal point of the offense." That might well be true. But this Baltimore defense, Greg, has been very exploitable on the back end. Do you expect a significant change in what Todd Haley's been doing so far this year simply because he's got Michael Vick in there at quarterback?
I do. I think they'll be selective attacking that secondary. I don't think they'll play the same way they would with Ben Roethlisberger, but I think they'll selectively attack. Now, last week they started Melvin at corner, and they ended up benching him. And then you know, playing Kyle Arrington on the outside. So it was pretty interesting because they would have loved Melvin to play well, and he did not. And he was matched up on Marvin Jones last week. So I would expect the Steelers to take their shots, be selective, but I think that the run game for the Steelers becomes far more important in this game.
We're going to go across the pond. The New York Jets are taking on the Miami Dolphins, Greg, and I think Miami is another one of these teams that fantasy players are very frustrated with. And Ryan Tannehill has been kind of fantasy players are kind of putting him in front of the firing squad. They are not very happy with him. But I almost wonder if before last week against Buffalo, when he clearly struggled, if he's been playing maybe a little bit better than people think, and their offense has just had trouble getting in sync and putting all the pieces together.
Well, they're essentially running the same offense, Joe, as the Eagles run, for the most part. And it's an offense that requires the run game to be, in many ways, the foundation, and certainly, if not the foundation, successful. And their run game has not really been successful. Now, until last week, Tannehill had played very well through two games. Obviously, last week he did not play as well. But this is an offense that right now is a one-dimensional offense, and that's the pass game. And it becomes too hard, and too hard particularly against good defenses.
So what's interesting to me is people are asking, when's Devontae Parker really going to take a step up? And he's been getting more involved, Greg, but this guy, Rishard Matthews, he just continues to make plays. And you wonder if Devontae Parker's breakout, if it comes this year, isn't going to come till later in the year, or maybe you even push that to 2016. I know you think he was a player who needed some work coming out of Louisville.
I did. I think he needs to get a lot more comfortable with the physical nature of the NFL game versus the college game. And my sense is, and of course, you can always be wrong on this when it comes to an individual player, but my sense is it will take him some time to acclimate to the NFL, and I would not expect him to be a weekly factor. Now, he might make a play here and there because he has ability, but I would be surprised if he was a weekly factor quickly. You know, I don't expect him to get 8, 9, 10 targets and catch 5, 6 balls on a weekly basis.
Greg, last week against the Eagles, Ryan Fitzpatrick dropped back over 50 times. Not really the recipe for success. Nope. However, the Jets, I mean, they went down 24-0 in the first half in that game, and they didn't have Chris Ivory. How much did the Jets miss Chris Ivory against Philadelphia?
Well, I think that's the way they want to play now. The game got out of hand quickly. I don't know if they would have stayed with the run. That's hard to know, but you hit it right on the head. Fitzpatrick is not a quarterback who can bring you from behind. So they need the game to play out a certain way. I mean, what you're dealing with, Fitzpatrick, it's funny. He plays like a gunslinger, and you talk about guys with a lot of moxie and all that, and that's great. But he has average arm strength, and he's not consistently accurate, and his decision-making is at times questionable. And all that is made worse when you're behind. So the Jets have to play a certain way. They essentially have to play to their run game and their defense. And when the score does not allow them to play that way, Fitzpatrick's deficiencies really become exposed.
The Giants travel to Buffalo to take on the Bills, who clearly look like a dangerous team, Greg. They're a team that I don't think anybody in the NFL would overlook at this point. But you made a point on one of the past podcasts with John that, as well as Tyrod Taylor's playing, the Bills still want to control the game. And fortunately for Tyrod Taylor, and if you've been using him for fantasy, I think the Bills have a roster, especially on the defensive side of the ball, that's going to allow them to dictate more games than not. And within that, Tyrod Taylor's playing very well.
And he fits that. I mean, they lead the NFL in rushing. That's the way they want him. In many ways, this is the same formula Rex Ryan used in Mark Sanchez's first 2 years. And I'm not comparing Sanchez and Taylor as players. I'm talking about the profile of a team. They want to run the ball, play good defense, have your quarterback be a complementary piece. The difference with Taylor is Taylor has the ability to make plays outside of structure far more than Mark Sanchez did. So Taylor is a more dynamic player within this profile.
And against the Giants, a defense that I would say has struggled, Greg, and maybe not an overly talented defense, it doesn't appear that the Bills are going to have LeSean McCoy this week. It doesn't look like they're going to have Sammy Watkins this week. So the rookie running back, Carlos Williams, out of Florida State, you could argue, is going to be the focal point of their attack this week. What kind of back is Williams, and can we expect him to have success against this Giant defense?
He's a straight-line power back who fits really, really well in Greg Roman's gap scheme run game, meaning counter, power, those kinds of runs. That's the kind of back Williams is. The foundational approach of Greg Roman fits Carlos Williams. And I think I'm not going to say there won't be a drop-off with McCoy, but Williams fits exactly what they want to do in the run game.
I think the interesting tactical matchup in this game is Rex Ryan going against Eli Manning. And Greg, you've described that even though the numbers haven't been huge, you think Eli Manning's playing very well this year. He won't have Victor Cruz again. The Giants have already ruled him out. They just ruled him out this morning. Looks like he's going to miss potentially significant more time. But the Giants have been getting the ball out quickly. They've been getting it to Odell Beckham. They've been getting it to Vereen. Reuben Randall got involved last week. And I'm very interested to see, does Rex Ryan try to force Eli Manning into his old habits, turning the ball over, forcing some throws? Or does he view Eli Manning within the context of this offense as a different player than he's been in the past? This is fascinating to me, and I'm curious as to what you think how Rex Ryan will approach this game.
Hard to know. All I can say is that the Giants offense and the pass game in particular has been very quick rhythm, quick timing. Eli's getting the ball out of his hands. He's not sitting in the pocket. In his past, that's where the mistakes came from. Will Rex try to blitz that knowing it's coming out fast? I don't know. One of the things that the Bills have done really well is they've played man coverage, but not press man. They've played off man, and they've done it really well. So does he now ask his corners to play press to disrupt timing? Because if you play off man, the ball can still come out pretty quickly. So this is, to me, the most fascinating chess match in this game.
Carolina and Tampa Bay. Carolina is sitting at 3-0, and they're in really good shape going forward, Greg, in a weak division. Cam Newton is playing very well, but the play calling in Carolina has been fascinating so far. What have you seen from the Carolina offense that you like a lot, and how is it helping Newton?
I love the Carolina offense. They've become one of my favorite offenses to watch, believe it or not, because of all the backfield actions and option dimensions that they now have in their offense. They put tremendous stress on a defense, and now you're getting defensive players that are uncertain, playing tentative, and that helps the pass game when they do backfield actions and it becomes run action or play action. It defines reads for Cam Newton, who, by the way, I think is throwing the ball better than he ever has in terms of consistency. He's always had games and moments, but I think consistently now over a longer period of time, he's throwing the ball very well.
And how will that backfield action, all the different elements that the Panthers use, affect Lovie Smith's defense? Greg, as we know, Lovie Smith's defense is a very execution-based defense, but he hasn't really had the players to run that as much as he would want, as well as he would want. I assume this is a very difficult matchup for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
Yeah, although theoretically, and again, now you're dealing with human nature and the reactions of human beings, but theoretically, if you're going to play zone, and let's say you choose, I don't think he'll play cover two on early down just because he'll want a safety closer to the line of scrimmage because of the run game, but let's say you're playing zone. Theoretically, you should not be overreacting or even reacting to any of these elements. You should be playing your assignment. Now, that's easier said than done because it's human beings reacting to what they see. But on the blackboard, a zone defense should be okay to some degree against this. And if Cam's going to run, then I think their approach would be, let's then go tackle him and keep the runs to a minimum. You know, maybe he gains 3 or 4 yards, and you live with that.
Tampa Bay flipping over 17 targets, Greg, last week for Mike Evans. He finally got going, but he draws a tough matchup. Can you discuss Josh Norman, the Carolina corner? He is a very, very, very good player. He's starting to get some of that national recognition. He made a phenomenal interception last week against the Saints. How would you view this matchup?
Well, I think Norman's playing really well, and I think that stylistically, and again, you say this stuff and people then think you're making, you know, you're comparing apples to apples, so to speak. But I think that his size, his length, and his movement at times looks like a Richard Sherman kind of player. You know, he's not Richard Sherman as we speak today, but he can become a really good NFL corner. And I think, you know, talking about the Bucs, I think that Jameis Winston has continued to improve each and every game. He's played three of them. I think he looks a little quicker now with his footwork when he plays under center. It's clear that they're working with him. He looks like he belongs. And does he have some bad moments with misreads? Absolutely. He may always be that kind of quarterback. Who knows? But I think this offense will get better. I think that the run game has kind of leveled off a little bit, Joe, and they need to be able to run the ball.
That's been a big problem. Doug Martin is, for fantasy, people have been asking if they can drop him. And at this point, he's splitting right. snaps with Charles Sims. And Charles Sims is catching a bunch of passes. Greg, he scored the touchdown last week. I guess this is the rotation the Bucs want, but they're still not running the ball very effectively.
No, I think they want Sims to I don't know if they view him as a guy who's going to get 20 to 22 carries every week, but it's clear because he brings a little more explosive element, particularly on the perimeter, than Martin does.
Oakland and Chicago, and just two, maybe last year, we would be viewing this game completely differently, but the Raiders are on an absolute roll. Derek Carr's thrown for over 300 yards in back-to-back games, and Greg, we discussed Derek Carr a lot last year. He wasn't putting up numbers, but there were elements to his play that were very positive. Now he's got the weapons, and he is putting up numbers, but is there any improvement in Derek Carr's game that suggests he's not done yet, that he hasn't hit his ceiling?
Oh, I think he's just starting. I think he's really talented. And, you know, it's funny. He's a second-year player, and the word I would use, which I would rarely use with a second-year quarterback, Joe, he's workmanlike. This is an offense that really presents him with a lot of concepts that are defined, a lot of what we call triangle reads, and it's clean, it's defined. He gets the ball out. He does not hold the ball. He's got some movement to him. I think for a second-year quarterback who started still less than 20 NFL games, he is a very professional, workmanlike player.
On the ground, the Raiders have been able to stick with the run, and that's been Latavius Murray almost exclusively. They don't have another back who can really pick up yards the way Murray can, but he's kind of a chunk yardage player. He's been getting making big plays, and he's been getting catches in the pass game, some checkdowns from Carr. What kind of back is Murray, Greg? Has your opinion changed on him from the brief few moments we saw of him last year?
Well, the style of runner he is hasn't changed. I mean, just because he had a big game yardage-wise, his game is built on downhill bursts. That's his strength. He's a strider who's at his best when the point of attack is cleanly defined and he can accelerate. He's not a guy who's necessarily going to create space when it's not blocked well. For a big man, he's not really a power runner. So he has a certain skill set that, if they can block well at the point, he will continue to get some long runs, but he'll also have a lot of 1 and 2 yard runs.
Greg, Amari Cooper at this point is absolutely, he's dominating in terms of what you would expect a rookie to do. I've been getting lineup questions with him. My advice to people is if you have Amari Cooper, just play him, enjoy him. He runs routes like a veteran. He took Joe Hayden to school last week. He's been phenomenal so far. But I want to talk about the other receiver in this offense, Michael Crabtree, who, Greg, he's had some fantasy value so far. He's getting a lot of targets. How does this offense fit with what Crabtree does in his skill set?
Really, really well. It's predominantly a short to intermediate passing game, and that's what Crabtree's strength is. So I think this offense really fits him well, and I would expect as Carr continues to get more experience, as this offense grows, and ideally as the team gets better and they can play offensively the way they want to play and not have to fight from behind, if that can continue to happen, then I think Crabtree becomes a significant factor. He's not as talented as Cooper, who's clearly the number one, but Crabtree is more than just sort of a secondary receiver within the context of this offense.
And just so I can sneak a question here about the Chicago Bears, who it looks like, Greg, barring something unforeseen, it's going to be Jimmy Clausen again. Martellus Bennett's going to be a popular player for fantasy this week. The Raiders have been absolutely slaughtered by tight ends thus far. What is it about their defense that has led to their struggles with the tight end?
You know, it's funny. I know that John's always asked me this. You're asking me this now. I think those are hard questions to answer. First of all, the sample size for this year is too small to really make a definitive answer. You know, can you sit here and say that their inside linebacker play and their safety play hasn't been really good, and that's usually where tight ends beat you? Although Tyler Eifert caught a touchdown pass when he was split outside on a corner week one. So there's always multiple reasons for that, Joe. There's never one sexy answer to questions like that. It's very team specific, opponent specific. It's what defense you're playing. So I can't give you one specific answer to that.
Kansas City and the Cincinnati Bengals, Greg. Another guy who, as we discussed at the top of the show, a lot of run games have been struggling. A lot of offensive lines have been struggling. We said it probably wasn't predominantly Justin Forsett's fault in Baltimore, but the concern I have with Jeremy Hill in Cincinnati is that Giovanni Bernard has looked significantly better than Jeremy Hill thus far. So far on film, does Jeremy Hill look like a different player than he was in the second half of last year when he led the NFL in rushing?
He does, and that's been a concern, because it's been a real concern. And again, maybe this is the week he breaks out. I can only tell you what the tape shows through 3 weeks. He's not running with the same conviction he did last season. He's looked tentative running inside. If you can visualize this, Joe, and hopefully people can, it looks like he's running to get tackled. And you're not seeing the same quick feet, because that was one of his strengths, a big man with quick feet. And that's a function of him running very tentatively right now.
So then the question becomes, why would the Bengals change the way they're playing? Andy Dalton, you can argue, is playing the best football of his career right now. And it's, in my mind, it's because he finally has, in addition to A.J. Green, he's got Marvin Jones and Tyler Eifert. And I think one thing people are forgetting, Greg, is that A.J. Green, for the most part, you can argue he missed five games last year because he left two games early with injury as well. That's not a way for Andy Dalton to have success. But now with Green back, Eifert back, he has played well. I know he was catchless last week, but he's not going away. And a very intriguing player, Marvin Jones, on the opposite side of Green, who is starting to establish fantasy value for himself. What does Marvin Jones do that complements A.J. Green so well?
Well, first of all, I think Marvin Jones is a really good second receiver to an A.J. Green. He's got good length. He's got deceptive movement. You wouldn't call him a burner, but he's got deceptive quickness and deceptive speed. He catches the ball well. He makes tough catches. And, you know, the thing that really is interesting is they will go to him, because if you think of the game against this past week against the Ravens, I think it was late in the game when they needed to score, and it was one-on-one on the outside with Marvin Jones, and that's exactly where Andy Dalton went with the ball, and it was obviously a completion. I think it was 31 yards on the final touchdown drive for the Bengals. And, you know, Marvin Jones has a lot of ability, and if he can stay healthy, I mean, you hit it right on the head. I think the keys to this offense and what ideally helps Dalton play more consistently for a longer period of time are Eifert and Jones, because Green is a known. We know what A.J. Green is.
Kansas City's offense, Greg, I think they kind of do what they do every week, and they were playing from behind against Green Bay, and that's never really a great position to put Alex Smith in. But I would anticipate, and correct me if I'm wrong, this could be a big Charles game, as it usually is. But given the Bengals' lack of speed at the second level, I would look for Kansas City to get Travis Kelce involved significantly in this game. Could be a really big game for the Chiefs' fantasy studs, Charles and Kelce.
Well, the Chiefs, it seems to me, almost do the same thing relatively every week. Now, when they get behind, it's difficult. And last week they got behind. Now they're in Cincinnati. Their defense will have to keep them in the game, because they're not a come-from-behind team. Alex Smith is not a come-from-behind quarterback. So they need to dictate offensively how they want to play. Kelce's big catches usually come on first down with Smith under center, off play action. Those are the plays you get in the normal course of a game when the score is close and you can run your offense the way you want it to run.
You talked about, Greg, how much you love watching the Carolina offense. One of the offenses that I've really enjoyed watching so far this year is the Atlanta Falcons. They're taking on the Houston Texans. They're looking to go 4-0. And I know, small sample notwithstanding, I think Kyle Shanahan is going to be coaching his way into a head coaching job very, very soon. What is he doing with this Atlanta offense? And a lot of people in the fantasy industry have said this. They love Shanahan because he puts the ball in the hands of the Falcons' good players and good things happen. And that makes him easy to follow for fantasy. It makes him a fantasy darling. But he's also running some really interesting things that not a whole lot of other teams are doing.
No, a couple of things. Number one, they're lining up with 21 personnel, meaning two backs with a fullback as one of the backs, more than any team in the league, and they're throwing out of it really effectively. The other thing that they're doing, and it seems obvious, but for instance, Dallas never really did it enough with Dez Bryant, is they're moving Julio Jones all over the formation. And when you do that, number one, it makes it really hard to double team. You know, everybody just assumed, oh, double a, you know, Julio Jones. Well, when a defense is called and then Jones lines up in a different spot than maybe is expected, it's hard to do that. So I was talking with someone this morning who said to me, totally honestly, this guy could catch 150 balls for 2,300 yards if they keep doing this and defenses don't really figure out exactly, you know, how to deal with this. And it's hard to, it's not an easy thing to do, but they are really using him effectively.
Greg, if I told you last week that Devontae Freeman was going to come out, was going to run the ball right down the Cowboys' throats, and he was going to essentially punch them in the mouth, he would look better than he's ever looked. Would you have called me nuts? Because I don't know how you could have predicted what Devontae Freeman did last week.
I had him for a 30 carries, 141 yards, didn't you, Joe?
No, unfortunately. We actually had him ranked pretty high. But, he looked really
well. He looked really good. And the thing, though, I like most about that performance, and again, it gets back to Kyle Shanahan, is he never abandoned the run. They fell behind 14-0, Joe. He never abandoned the run. He stayed with the run the entire game, and it proved effective.
Greg, Ryan Mallett, still starting for Houston, and the Texans were in a game that was close, and it's the game where you really want to see Ryan Mallett, see what the Texans want to do with him. He's obviously a very interesting player. He's an intriguing player. What is Bill O'Brien doing with him to get him comfortable? And do you think he'll be able to keep it up against the Falcons this week?
Well, there were a lot of quick drop short throws, defined throws. That's what they're trying to do with him. Mallett is as big a tease as any quarterback playing in the NFL. He may well have the strongest arm in this league. I mean, he throws the ball so well. There are some throws he makes you just go, oh my God, what, that's ridiculous. Now he's needs to be a much more precise ball placement passer consistently to have a chance to be a quality NFL starter. I can't speak to the mental element of his game because they're trying to keep it simple. But by the way, it's only his fourth NFL start. There's always a couple of throws every game that are just unbelievable. He had Hopkins for 30 yards in the fourth quarter on the touchdown drive. That was just a ridiculous throw. I don't know if you saw that play.
I did.
But yeah, there's, you know, at this point, he's still clearly a work in progress. Like I said, he started four games, and there's probably a reason why up to this point in his career, he's only started four games. We're not with him every day. So, but the talent is really off the charts. And now can the rest of it work together with the talent? And that's an overtime thing.
Jacksonville travels to Indianapolis. The Colts finally got off the schneid last week, Greg, but the concerns, at least from the fantasy industry, about Andrew Luck are mounting. This is a guy taking a lot of hits, and he's turning the ball over a lot. Is there anything troubling with Andrew Luck's tape personally, or is he in just such a difficult spot with this offensive line that it's hard to judge him accurately based on the tape?
Well, you still can't turn it over, and you still can't make poor decisions and poor throws, such as his second interception last week. You can't do that no matter what the rest of your team is. But if you look at the bigger picture, look, they told you how things are going by the changes they made on their offensive line, Joe. They had three new players in different, you know, overall in different positions and new people starting on their offensive line. So they're really struggling in that area. They're not particularly good defensively. They recognize that they need to get Frank Gore more involved. The first three plays of the game were run plays. So they're working through this. Now, Andrew Luck may have to change his mentality a little bit. He may have to sort of become a little safer player. One of the things that has made him great has clearly been the fact that he's a turn-it-loose quarterback that can make big, big-time throws. But at some point, you do have to recognize the limitations of your team. And now I'm not saying they're at that point. They've also played the first 3 weeks, three teams that blitzed a ton in the Bills, the Jets, and the Titans. This week they play the Jaguars, who normally are a low percentage blitz team.
Flipping to the Jaguars offense, Greg, and unfortunately Blake Bortles couldn't build on a really strong week two performance going into New England. I think everybody knew Belichick was going to be licking his chops to get after Blake Bortles. Did you see that offense, Greg? Are the same concerns still propping up for Blake Bortles that have been in the past?
Well, this is another team with a very average O-line. It's a team that can't get behind, that has to sort of stay on schedule within the game. And this is a bad week to judge. This will be a much better week, Joe, to see where Blake Bortles and the offense stands against the Colts. It's really difficult to judge a quarterback when you're down big, particularly young quarterbacks. Very few of them are going to look good in those situations.
You're listening to the FantasyGuru.com Week 4 Matchup Podcast. I am managing editor Joe Dolan, and I am joined, as always, by the senior producer of the NFL Matchup Show on ESPN, Greg Cosell. Greg, gracefully giving us his time. Thankfully giving us his time, Greg. I don't think I used the word gracefully right there, but whatever the case, let's get into another game that probably will not be very graceful this week if Hurricane Joaquin has anything to say about it. That would be the Philadelphia Eagles and Washington. And Greg, you were discussing Ryan Mallett before, how we're essentially viewing him as a rookie. You're talking about Jameis Winston. He's improving incrementally, as you would expect from a rookie. And I'm curious, given the fact that he hasn't played essentially meaningful football in two calendar years, he's in a new offense with a new coaching staff. How much of a leash do you give Sam Bradford when you're watching him on film? Because the concern for me with Bradford is the ball just doesn't seem to be coming out of his hand the way you expect. I think some other things you deal with. You deal with the skittishness. You understand maybe he's thinking through things a little too much in a new offense. But can that all start to affect the way the ball actually comes out of a quarterback's hand as well?
For sure. Right now, he's aiming the ball, Joe. He's not stroking it comfortably. And I think that he's not seeing things clearly. He's unsettled in the pocket. His ball placement has been poor. I don't think I've seen him throw it this poorly. Now, you have to understand one thing. It's been accepted as gospel that this guy's a really accurate passer. If you go back, even in St. Louis, other than moments here and there, he has not been a consistently accurate passer in the NFL. So this sort of thing that's thrown out as if it's a mathematical equation that, oh, he's a really accurate guy, that's not been true for the most part in the NFL. We'll see what the leash is. This team's 1-2. They were very fortunate to win last week. It was still not a good offensive performance. The run game put up more yards, but the issues were still there. Yeah, so the yards are, you have to be a little careful. It doesn't give you really an honest assessment of where their run game is.
A guy a lot of people are also interested in is Nelson Agholor, the rookie receiver. And obviously you've been watching the Eagles a lot, Greg. Did you know Nelson Agholor? I mean, obviously you know this. He's matched up with Darrell Revis. He's matched up with Desmond Trufant. He's spent a lot of his time on some of the better corners in the NFL. Is there anything you've seen from Agholor on film that would be concerning? Or would this be a good week, in theory, to get him going against a weaker Washington secondary?
Well, I don't know if they run their offense that way, Joe. And Agholor has not really been a factor in their pass game through three games. Not really anybody has, with the possible exception of Matthews. But I don't know if they run their offense that way. They show no vertical dimension whatsoever. The ball does not get thrown down the field. I don't know if Aguilar is actually that guy. The probably the most explosive player as a receiver for them is Huff. But the problem with Huff is he's always hurt. And you know whether that's going to change, who can say? But you know, I didn't see Aguilar coming out as a vertical guy. Maybe they did, and that could be why they drafted him where they did. But he's not shown that to be the case through three games, and they have not really attacked down the field.
The Eagles, though, have been playing very well defensively, and that front seven, Greg, has been very impressive, even with some significant injuries. Kiko Alonso, Michael Kendricks, Cedric Thornton, who's a perennially underrated player, he's been hurt as well. The rookie linebacker Jordan Hicks played great against the New York Jets. And I'm curious how this matchup is going to go because the weather may be poor and you would think Washington needs to continue to run the ball. They got the game got away from them last week against the Giants. Kirk Cousins turned the ball over early in that game. Greg, for the first time, I believe Matt Jones significantly outsnapped Alfred Morris last week, 26-12. They had Chris Thompson in there when they got behind. But this is something you predicted in the preseason. You thought this was going to happen, and I think it's happened sooner than people even expected. And even though Jones had the bad fumble late in that game as he was heading into the end zone, is it obvious to you that he's the better back for what they want to do than Alfred Morris?
To me, it is, and I thought that, as I told you guys in the preseason, he's a better runner. He's got more traits that you look for in a good runner. I think he'll continue to be the guy, and good weather or bad weather, the run game needs to be their foundation. Cousins needs to be managed and manipulated. He has a bad tendency of escaping back out of the pocket, which you can't do in the NFL, so he needs to be controlled and managed in order for this offense to be effective, and the main player in this offense, if DeSean Jackson continues to be out, is Jordan Reed. He's their matchup player, and that's the player you really have to concern yourself with if you're the Eagles.
Cleveland and San Diego, Greg, I think a lot of people in the fantasy industry, including us, believe this is going to be the Unleash Melvin Gordon week. He's out-touched Danny Woodhead the last 2 weeks, but he still hasn't played more snaps in the game than Woodhead. Now, the Chargers have major changes up front. They've had injuries along the offensive line. Phillip Rivers got a little banged up last week. How do you weigh that, the fact that they're changing the offensive line around out of necessity, with the fact that they need to run the ball in this game?
Yeah, I think because of their O-line, it always and they're playing an offense that they have to figure is not going to score a lot of points. Wouldn't you agree with that?
Yes, absolutely. I think it might be the worst offense in the NFL.
Right. So I think the approach becomes behind a poor offensive line or a totally revamped offensive line, so it's an unknown, and with a quarterback who's a pocket quarterback as really good as Rivers is, he's still not a guy who's going to. He needs an O-line to function really well. It would make sense that the run game would be much more of a factor this week in the overall scheme of how they can win this game. So, yes, I think this could be a Melvin Gordon game in terms of number of carries. Now, I don't think they're giving it to him 30 times, but clearly I think that he's a bigger factor in this game for them than he has been in the first three.
Has he surprised you with how – I think he's looked really good, personally, so far early this year.
Yeah, I do,
too. Has that surprised you?
Yes, particularly coming off the preseason, where I thought that he was really tentative, and he had that in college as well at times, and I thought that he'd have to work through it at the NFL level, and he's worked through it so far quicker than I thought he would.
Flipping over to the Browns, Duke Johnson has out-snapped Isaiah Crowell each of the last 2 weeks. He caught six passes last week. Greg, you would assume that on the road, they're more than a touchdown underdog against the Chargers. This could be the week where maybe their plan for Duke Johnson really comes to fruition. In general, the Browns haven't been able to run the ball, so you would think that they would probably like to get the more talented player involved.
Well, and again, not to be a broken record, but this is a team that needs to run the ball because otherwise their offense can't really function. So whether it's Crowell, whether it's Johnson, I still think they'll mix and match because I think Crowell, he's a bigger back. He's got a little more natural power. Johnson is the smaller, more elusive back. It's a good mix. I don't think either one. Now, for any given week, any back can carry 25 times. You know that, Joe. But neither one necessarily fits the profile of a foundation back over time. So it really depends on how they game plan and how they see their offense against the Chargers defense.
One of the more fascinating matchups of the week, Greg, is Minnesota traveling to Denver. And after Minnesota got smoked in San Francisco in week one, they've kind of changed things up almost completely. Teddy Bridgewater has been, Greg, I almost think it would be maybe being a little aggressive to call him a complimentary player in this offense. To me, it seems like they're completely hiding him. They're just, this is Peterson from opening kickoff to final whistle.
And that's the way they've won the last 2 weeks, and they've put Bridgewater under center more because Peterson likes to run with the quarterback under center as opposed to the gun. And I think they've recognized what their team is, Joe. And again, when you watch tape, these are not bold statements, you know, and I'm fortunate. I get to sit here and watch tape on a weekly basis. But Bridgewater is not an overly talented quarterback. He's a compliment. He needs a run game. He needs a defense. That's what kind of quarterback he is. He can be very good in that role, but that's what he is. And to suggest that he's more because he had a few good games at the end of last year, I think is missing the point. Now, you can be a very good player doing that, by the way. It's just that he's not a big-time thrower, and he's not going to be.
And, I would assume if Mike Zimmer had his way, Teddy Bridgewater would throw fewer than 20 passes in this game. You're going up against the Denver defense that arguably has both the best pass rush and best secondary in the NFL. This is not a great game, especially with Charles Johnson now injured, to get Teddy Bridgewater 350 yards passing. And the thing is because of what Peyton Manning has done the last few years in Denver, teams going into Denver, you always assume those teams are going to be playing from behind. But Denver right now is not that type of offense either. They're trying to keep things on schedule themselves.
No, and I think that for the most part, Minnesota will be able to play the way they want to play. Now, they are playing against what, in my view, could well be the best defense in the NFL, but they still have to play their game. They're not going to go in there and ask Teddy Bridgewater to air it out 40 times. That would be a recipe for disaster.
Greg, the Denver running game has been a big bone of contention for fantasy players. They are sick and tired of CJ Anderson.
I can see that. I can see that, Joe. I feel their pain.
But the thing is, Ronnie Hillman hasn't looked good. They've barely gotten Juwan Thompson involved. In theory, with Peyton playing more out of the shotgun, or the pistol, if you'll call it that, last week against the Lions, is this a positive development to get Anderson and or Hillman going? Because those guys were successful last year running out of the shotgun. That's where they made their hay.
I think it's more a recognition that they want to run Gary Kubiak's run game and combine it with Peyton's comfort in the pass game. Now, whether that leads to success in the run game remains to be seen, but you can run the full complement of Gary Kubiak's run game in the pistol. You can't out of the shotgun with the back offset. So they're trying to still work through Gary Kubiak's run game and let that be what ideally he wants it to be, but yet play to Peyton's strength as essentially a shotgun quarterback.
That Peyton compromise is something I think it's just totally fascinating, and I'm excited to watch it going forward. And this is a tough matchup. Minnesota's played extremely well defensively the last couple weeks, so this could be one of those sneaky 20-17 games where it's a real struggle for either team to score a touchdown. I'm looking forward
could
to
be.
This one. Especially if you like defensive football. These are two good defensive teams. Greg, two teams on the opposite end of the spectrum right now, at least offensively, are the Green Bay Packers and the San Francisco 49ers. Rodgers, I don't even know what else to say about the guy at this point, but one player who I think is interesting and is going to be intriguing to fantasy players is the rookie receiver out of Stanford, Ty Montgomery, who scored a touchdown last week. Can he give that offense something if he is getting snaps, and I think he played about 90% of the offensive snaps last week, can he give them something that Devontae Adams, if he can't play this week with the ankle injury, cannot give them? And I think that's what's interesting about Montgomery.
Well, I don't know if he gives them something Adams can't. I think in this offense that receivers can blossom and function well, because in many ways, when you look at typical receiver traits, it seems as if they're not as important in this offense because Rodgers is such a secondary action player, a player who doesn't necessarily throw a lot of balls within the rhythm that you normally coach and want to see. So I think when you, like the touchdown he scored last week, when he runs the route and all of a sudden Rodgers moves and he bends back outside and he beats Cooper, you know, that was not the route, the called route. That was a reaction. So I think a lot of receivers, if they can develop an understanding and work with Rodgers, and certainly Montgomery's a rookie, but if he can develop that, then he can make catches in this offense.
And I think this is why maybe some of us underestimated James Jones a little bit coming into this offense. Now, if you're on Twitter, Greg, you're looking at Giant beat writers are getting absolutely harassed by Giant fans who see James Jones going for 6 for 120 and a touchdown, and they're like, we could have used this guy. But the fact of the matter is, James Jones would not have been this same receiver with Eli Manning. As good as Eli Manning is, has been, will be, whatever, he just would not be this type of receiver with the Giants. It's the understanding with Rodgers, as you discussed.
Yeah, yes, and also, if you look at most of his catches, okay, not every single one, but most of them, he's actually pretty well covered. It's not as if he's all of a sudden creating separation. But, you know, so again, here's a perfect example where if you just look at his skill set, you view him as, oh, he's a fourth or fifth receiver on a team. And I'm sure the Giants looked at it that way and then figured, hey, you know, we don't need a 30-plus-year-old fourth or fifth receiver. So, it's a little different.
Flipping over to San Francisco, Greg, and if you're a believer that a guy's past performance against a team matters when projecting him for fantasy, this is your bellwether game, because Colin Kaepernick has dominated the Packers in the past. But, Greg, I think you can argue right now he is struggling more than any quarterback in the NFL. He had a really, really hard time against the Cardinals last week.
That's fair. I think right now you're dealing with a quarterback that's not seeing things clearly, that's slow to process. He's uncomfortable. He's not getting rid of the ball on plays when the ball needs to be thrown. He's going through one of those stages. If you talk to any quarterback, I mean, I work with Ron Jaworski, you know, as you know, very closely, and, you know, hey, all quarterbacks will say, hey, I've been there, you know. And now the question is, can you work through that? Now, he's never been really great as far as precision processing of information. That hasn't been his game. So he's almost starting from scratch in learning how to play the position. And are there legitimate concerns as to whether he'll ever get there? Yes, I think there are. But he's right now, he's going through as hard a time as really any quarterback can go through.
St. Louis travels to Arizona. Arizona is maybe, Greg, one of the 5 or 6 teams you can count that are actually playing legitimately good football on both sides. And this is a tough matchup for St. Louis. Greg, I'm sure you believe this as well as I do. This is the week St. Louis has got to try to get Todd Gurley going, because this team cannot function offensively if Todd Gurley is not the foundation. Because, I mean, look, they put up 6 points against the Pittsburgh Steelers last week. And that's not good enough.
No, and you would think. See, one of the fascinating things about Arizona, they may have one of the most intriguing defensive players in the league, Joe, in Dion Buchanan. Now, he's a safety, okay? He's probably 220 pounds. But when they play their base defense against base personnel on offense, he is an inside linebacker, okay? And he plays as if he's a linebacker. So you would think you could run the ball against this defense because he's 220 pounds, Dion Buchanan. But he's such a fascinating player. He plays in the box exceptionally well. But getting back to your point, yes, they need to go on the road, St. Louis, that is, and try to run the ball. They need to do that. They can't play offense if they can't do that.
And if you'll remember, Nick Foles last year in Philadelphia, they traveled to Arizona. He threw for 414 yards against the Cardinals, but the Eagles ran close to 90 plays in that game. And Todd Bowles and James Betcher, the new defensive coordinator in Arizona, is a Todd Bowles understudy. He was bringing Greg like triple A gap pressures, and he was moving Foles' feet. And Foles was essentially backing out of the pocket on almost every throw. You can be damn sure if St. Louis is dropping Foles back to pass, James Betcher is going to remember what happened in this game last year.
Well, I will tell you this. If they get into long yardage situations too often, you can absolutely guarantee that they will get a heavy dose of the Cardinals blitz, and they will struggle. They start two rookies on their O-line. Greg Robinson, the second-year player who is the high draft choice, has really struggled. If they get into too many of those situations, it could get ugly, Joe.
Greg, the Chris Johnson revival. You know, I was telling people, I wrote a column last week on the site, and I was like, drop Chris Johnson. I'd rather have David Johnson. And of course, he comes out and just punches me in the face with his game last week. He scores two touchdowns. However, he played well, but this offense is building off of the play of Carson Palmer, who has been spectacular so far, and he has contributed to a rejuvenation for Larry Fitzgerald. Just how well is Palmer playing in relative to the rest of the league?
Really well. I mean, right now he's playing top five quarterback in this league. He's stroking it beautifully. He's reading coverage. He's making big-time throws because this is not a check-down offense, Joe, as you know. This is an intermediate and vertical passing game, and he's making big-time throws at the intermediate levels. He's hanging in the pocket. He's delivering the ball on time. He's playing at a really high level right now.
Sunday Night Football could be the battle of Brandon Whedon and Luke McCown, Greg. It looks like Drew Brees is going to try to play this week, but we can't make any statements for sure at this point. But I'm fascinated with Dallas's offense in this game because Dallas went out against Atlanta last week, ran the ball extremely well, and then their defense couldn't stop the Falcons, and they had to get away from their plan, and then Whedon's limitations were exposed. Can the Cowboys, against arguably the worst defense in the NFL, the New Orleans Saints, open it up a little bit more? Or with Whedon, are they going to have to play the check down Charlie game that they did last week against the Falcons?
Well, I think they're going to have to run it better for longer. They ran it well early. Then the running game both stopped and was not effective when it was utilized. Their offense with Whedon has to be a function of a complete game, Joe. If their defense is going to give up that many points, then Whedon's limitations will be exposed. But if they can keep the game defensively so that they can run the ball, control and manage Whedon, then they have a chance to win. The Saints do not have a real good defense, obviously. You know, I thought they did absolutely the right thing with McCown last week, who quite frankly played pretty well. It was quick throws, get the ball out, don't ask him to read too much. He made a couple of real good throws too when he needed to, but I thought they handled him well. They're starting to incorporate C.J. Spiller into the offense now, more so as a receiver, but some interesting, you know, he lines up in different places. He ran some wheel routes. He's a very good receiver. So they're starting to work different people in. Willie Snead is actually a pretty interesting player for them. He's playing because they need some speed on the perimeter.
And Greg, I just want to discuss Mark Ingram because I don't think people understood or expected. I certainly didn't expect Mark Ingram to be, through three games, the number three receiver at the running back position.
Yeah.
Is this a new element to his game? Is this something he's always been capable of doing, or is it just the way they're calling plays?
It's a new element, and I noticed it in the preseason, and I don't know if I mentioned it, but we almost did a piece on it in the matchup show. I'm like, wow, they're throwing the ball to Mark Ingram, and they're not just little checkdowns, they're actual routes, and they've continued to do that in the regular season.
It's fascinating, and I mean, it's made him a top five fantasy back so far. He's been excellent. He's kind of been the focal point of their offense. With Brandon Cooks, I mean, obviously with the quarterback struggles, I don't know how much of that is on him. But back to Dallas in the run game, I think this is a perfect illustration of the point you made this offseason. They're getting production out of Joe Randle. They're getting production out of Lance Dunbar, and they're even getting some production out of Darren McFadden. And yet, we saw last week against Atlanta, they could not control the ball the way they did last year. And it highlights how rare a season DeMarco Murray had. You can't.
I was going to say, Joe, that I made that point pretty strongly. I think, you know, I made that point when we all met, you know, back in May. I made that point all summer that their run game was not going to be the same. And I like Joseph Randle. You can make an argument he has more running skill than DeMarco Murray. But, it was not going to be the same. What Murray did last year, regardless of what his skill set is, it was pretty remarkable, and that was not going to be duplicated with one back, and it was not going to be duplicated by committee.
If you think your NFL team, if you have a rooting interest in the NFL, and you think your NFL team's in a tougher spot than the Detroit Lions, I can't imagine, Greg, that anybody is. They're 0-3. They now have to travel to Seattle. Matthew Stafford is really struggling. Is there a specific thing that ails this Lions offense, or is it just kind of the total package that's really starting to kind of come rotten here?
Well, they don't really run the ball well at all, and that's an issue. And again, we can debate, you know, they didn't run it great last year either. But they're certainly not running it well at all now. And, you know, Stafford, he's one of those quarterbacks that I find so interesting. I struggle with him because I love the way he throws the ball. Love it. It's hard not to love how he throws it. But the more I watch him, sometimes I think he doesn't see the field well. There are too many throws he should make that he doesn't. There's too many that he shouldn't that he does. I mean, it just seems that to this point in his career, and he's now played, he's basically in his fifth season not missing a game right now after, I guess, his first 2 years. I feel like he should be more advanced in the subtleties of the position, both pre-snap and post-snap. And I guess I don't see that on film, and yet then he'll make three throws and you go, oh my God, you know, not many guys are making that throw. So he's almost become, which is the worst thing to say about a quarterback, I almost feel like he's becoming a week-to-week player, Joe.
And that's unfortunate for the Lions because, as you said, they can't run the ball. In my opinion, though it might not be ideal, I think they need to hand the reins over to Ameer Abdullah and mix in Theo Riddick. Greg, I'm not high on Riddick as an interior runner. Do you think maybe he can do a little bit more than I believe he can in that type of role? Because he's been almost exclusively a receiver so far this year.
Yeah, and I really like his skill set. I'm not suggesting you can line him up in the backfield and give it to him 20 times, but you know, Joe Lombardi, who's their OC, and of course he's coming under fire now. You know, that's just the nature of the business. But he came from New Orleans, and I know I mentioned this in the preseason and probably over the summer as well to you, but I think he could become their Pierre Thomas. I think he's that kind of player, and I just feel like right now their offense is searching for, and I hate to be cliched, but I don't know how else to say it, so almost searching for an identity right now. And then they don't seem to have defined roles. You know, is Abdullah a feature back, or is he a once-in-a-while guy? You know, is Joik Bell going to be their feature back, or what is he? I just feel like there's a little uncertainty as to how they want to use their backs and how it fits into how they want to play.
Man of the hour, Greg, in Seattle is the rookie running back Thomas Rawls, who had their first 100-yard game by a guy not named Marshawn Lynch since 2012. Thought he looked pretty good. As a matter of fact, Greg, he gave them more in the running game than Marshawn Lynch has given them this year. What kind of back is Thomas Rawls, and is this somebody who can, I don't want to say replace Marshawn Lynch, but rather if Marshawn Lynch were to miss time, is this somebody who can keep their offense on schedule?
Yeah, I think so. He's about 220 pounds. I think he's got some natural power. He's downhill. I liked what I saw on film. Now, he was a big-time recruit coming out of high school who went to the University of Michigan. So he was thought of highly, ended up at, I forget, it was Central Michigan or Western Michigan. I forget which school. But I remember watching him. And he has NFL talent. And I think the way they run their offense, always with the element of read option and Wilson's ability to run, I think he can be an effective back in their offense.
Greg, that'll wrap it up for week four. I want to remind the people about the NFL matchup show. Greg, when can they check that out this weekend?
That would be on Saturday morning on ESPN2 at 8:30 a.m. Eastern, on Sunday morning at 6:30 a.m. on ESPN. Obviously, it's a DVR show, but I hope people will do that.
Yeah, and it's everything's a DVR show for me at this point, Greg, except unless I'm actually watching a live sporting event, everything's DVR. I have the NFL matchup show on my DVR. If you think Greg went into detail on this podcast, wait until you check out the NFL matchup show and the stuff they break down. It will blow your mind. But that will wrap it up for week four. I'm Joe Dolan. I'm standing in for John Hansen this week. He will be back with you shortly. But for myself and for Greg Cosell, have a great day, everyone. Enjoy week four and good luck in your fantasy matchups.